What's up, Flying Squad? Welcome back to another episode of Flying MMA Opinions and News. I am, of course, Flying Brian, and this podcast is proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA, raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look him up on Twitter, at UniqueKennels71, and also on Instagram, instagram.com/UniqueKennels. If you haven't had your daily dose of cute yet, go there on Instagram and get that in right now. Here with me again today, Daniel Levy with MMA Thought and Best Fight Picks. If you don't know him, you're in for a hell of a treat because he is the best fight analyst in the entire business. What's up, Daniel?
What's up, Brian? Thanks for having me back, man.
No problem. I mean, it's basically I had no choice. Once again, the fans demanded it, and so I gave in, and here you are.
Well, that's quite the introduction. I hope I can live up to it.
I have no doubt that you're going to because you are the best fight analyst in the business. I have no doubt about that. When we started this, we said that we were only going to do numbered events. So 187 we're going to do. We did 186. We did 185. But we're breaking that rule and we are going to do UFC Fight Night Adelaide, Australia.
I'm pumped, man. This is a great card too.
I think that it's an amazing card and I'm pretty stoked that it's on Fight Pass. I've been a Fight Pass subscriber since basically they launched it. And so I feel like I deserve this card. Normally they throw the fight cards on Fight Pass at us like in the morning or the middle of the night. We're at some weird ass time, but this is actually at like a normal time, which I'm pretty fucking pumped about.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch at a normal time for us. It's funny because it's actually in Australia. So who knows what time it's going to be on their end. But this one's going to be a good time for us. And then next week, we're going to get back to that breakfast with the UFC.
Oh, that's next week? Is that another Fight Pass card?
Yeah, the Frankie Edgar versus Uriah Faber in the Philippines.
Badass. Two Fight Pass cards in consecutive weeks. Wow, we're really living the dream.
I know, man. They spoil us so much, and everyone complains about the quality of the cards, man. I don't know. I just like to watch live fights, and I'm really pumped to see Mark Hunt and Stipe Miocic and all the other great fights this weekend.
You and I are going to break down this fight from bottom to top. Of course, we're going to start with Alptekin Özkılıç versus Ben Nguyen, and then all the way up to Stipe Miocic. But before we do that, there's a pretty pressing piece of news that we're going to talk about. What was that again?
I hear John Jones got stripped of his title.
Yeah, and I know how I feel about that, and I know how most of the Flying Squad on the Twitterverse feels about that, but how do you feel about that?
Man, you know what? It sucks. It's a real shame because he is such a talented guy and on the cusp of breaking records. But you know, first and foremost, you can't do what he did. You know, it's not a good example, and it's just not. You know, he hurt someone and fled the scene. So, you know, it is good that he turned himself in, and hopefully he reaches a settlement with that lady that was hurt in the accident. But as far as the sport is concerned, it's just a real shame to see someone so talented, you know, make wrong decisions like that. So I truly hope that he gets the help he needs and he emerges from this the champion he truly is. If he's able to turn this into a positive, what a comeback story that'll really be. You know, hopefully he can come back, reclaim that 205-pound belt, and then potentially win that heavyweight belt. That'll be a 3-time UFC champion and a 2-division champion as well. So he still has potential to do the feats and, you know, break these records and get the accolades that he strives for. The only shame is that, you know, he was about to tie GSP's title defense record, and then one more win after that, he would have tied Anderson Silva's record for 10 consecutive title defenses. So now he's not going to be able to do that, unfortunately. But if he does reclaim the belt, he can always start over. It's just it's going to take a while, you know. He was right at the cusp.
I know that it's terrible of me, and I'm obviously a pretty terrible person, but I'm happy that he's not going to get the chance to break Anderson Silva's title defense record because I'm a big Anderson Silva fan. So that's selfish of me, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Interestingly enough, he would have already beat the 16 consecutive wins that Anderson Silva had it not been for the Matt Hamill fight where, you know, Matt Hamill used a great strategy on his head busting up Jones' elbow, right?
I mean, I don't see why no other fighter implements that game plan on John Jones. I mean, why don't they just call him up? Oh, I mean, they should go talk to Matt Hamill in person because they probably couldn't call him. They should go talk to him and say, hey, man, tell me how to beat John Jones.
Yeah, and Matt Hamill, you know, didn't he do something very heroic recently? I think he saved a kid or something like that. So, I mean, this guy's saving kids and he's beating John Jones in the first round. So we got to take something from him.
I don't see why he's not more famous.
Yeah.
All jokes aside, let's get into breaking down UFC Fight Night. What number is this guy? Fight Night
65, Hunt versus Miocic.
We are way up there. Fight Night 65, live and on Fight Pass. And I'm going to direct you toward Alptekin Özkılıç, the Turkish Delight, versus Ben Nguyen. Break it down for us.
All right, so Ben Nguyen, he actually just got signed to the UFC, and he's kind of he's like a YouTube sensation. There's this video that went around of this guy he's tattooed from head to toe and like has face tattoos, and there's this pre-fight stare down, and it's Ben Nguyen against this guy with the tattoos, and the guy with the tattoos is all up in his face, and he's being completely disrespectful at the weigh-ins, like, you know, head nudging him and pushing him and all this stuff. And then when the fight comes around, Ben Nguyen like knocks him out relatively quickly, and he knocks him out in brutal fashion. So it was karma at its finest. And I guess the UFC saw that video because it went viral, man, and they signed him. And now he's fighting Alptekin Özkılıç. And Özkılıç, he's a very strong grappler, this guy. You know, he came on the scene in the UFC and fought Darren Uyenoyama. And at the time, Uyenoyama was known to be a very, very dominant grappler. And Özkılıç actually out-grappled him. So he's got very, very solid fundamentals on the ground. He can get very dominant positions, land some ground and pound, and go for the submissions. So Ben Nguyen's going to have to try to keep this fight on the feet. Now on the feet, Özkılıç, you know, he can stand and bang, man. He went in there with John Lineker, and he took his ass whooping like a man. I'll say that straight up. He got TKO'd in the third round, but up until then, he was trying to go toe-to-toe with John Lineker. Now, in my opinion, that might be a little knock on his fight IQ, because when you fight a guy like John Lineker, the one thing you don't do is stand and bang with John Lineker. You're supposed to take him down, tire him out. And granted, John Lineker did stuff the takedown, so Özkılıç was unsuccessful in that aspect of the game. Now, against Ben Nguyen, I don't think he's going to have as good a takedown defense as John Lineker, so there's a better chance for Alptekin Özkılıç to get that top position and grind out the victory and potentially get a submission. So I do have to favor Özkılıç here, but I'm not going to bet on this one just because we haven't seen Ben Nguyen in the UFC yet. Now, Ben Nguyen has been finished by knockout like 4 times, so as I've said before many times, I'm always cautious to bet on guys that have been knocked out on a consistent basis, but he seems to be at this point in his career where he's really turning things around, and now he's on a little win streak. He's starting to find his groove. So we'll see how that translates into his UFC debut, but as far as a fantasy prediction goes, I would pick Alptekin Özkılıç by decision or by submission.
So you said that you're not putting a unit on this fight, but you did tell me that you're going to be revealing your fight picks, your bets, for the first time on this podcast. Is that correct?
This is correct, Brian. Yeah, we haven't given them out yet, so might as well give them out on here.
Debuting them right here on Flying MMA Opinions and News. I certainly appreciate that, Daniel.
My pleasure, man. I appreciate you having me again.
So no play on this flyweight fight. So we're going to move on to Vic Grujic versus Brendan O'Reilly, the Spartan versus the Badger. I'm one guy that loves the nickname battle, and this is a close one. I don't know who I would pick here, but what about the breakdown?
So, on paper, Brendan O'Reilly does have a better record than Vic Grujic, but as far as how they've fought, Grujic looks a lot better, man. And it's interesting because he is getting up there in age. I think he's between the 38 to 40 range, but he's starting to make some changes in his career. You know, he's training over in Alliance now, and he's a guy from Australia, so he's literally making the trip, you know, across the world to go to California and train under, you know, the great coaches and have great training partners over at Alliance. You know, Dominic Cruz is over there, Miles Jury, a bunch of great guys. So he's over there working very, very hard. And And the thing with Brendan O'Reilly is that, you know, he was on Tough and he didn't look very good. And then in his last fight against Zhang, the Tough China winner, he didn't look very good either. He literally got out grappled by the Tough China winner. And, you know, as many people know, the talent level on the Tough China season wasn't the best at all. And Brendan O'Reilly, he got outgrinded by one of those guys. So in my personal opinion, I don't believe that his ceiling is very high. Now, with that being said, Grujic's really getting up there in age, so you don't know how much he has left in the tank. But the reason I am picking Grujic is just for the sole fact that he is training out of a better camp, and he has shown improvements. So even though he's the older guy, I'm picking him, but absolutely no bet on this fight.
Yeah, Grujic's something like 36 to 37 years old. That's pretty old for a mixed martial artist. And I see that the odds say that it's basically a pick 'em. Who did you say that we're going to pick on our fantasy teams?
I'm going with Grujic on this one. I just think he's a better fighter.
Yeah, he's a very slight favorite on the pick 'em. And no bet once again. Moving on to, are we going to break this one down? Alex Chambers versus Kaelin Curran?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Astro Girl versus No Nickname. What's up with the no nicknames? I don't get it. We got 4-2 from Australia versus 3-1 from the USA. Break it down, brother.
So Kaelin Curran, she's actually a really bright prospect. She made her debut against Paige VanZant, and she gave her a really good fight. You know, she ended up losing by third round TKO, but she showed signs that she's got a lot of talent, a lot of promise, and a lot of potential. You know, she'd land some judo throws and some blast doubles. So it was a very, very good UFC debut. She even took home, you know, the fight of the night bonus for that. Now, against Alex Chambers, Chambers is getting up there in age, and the issue with her being an older fighter is that she doesn't have that much experience. So, you know, for example, someone like Machida, yeah, he's 37, but for the most part, aside from when he fights Luke Rockhold, he looks pretty damn amazing against younger guys, but he's been fighting for years. Chambers is up there in age, and, you know, her career, like, basically just started, and I must say, she should probably be fighting a weight class lower. So she's already fighting against bigger girls, and she gets submitted a lot. So what I think is going to happen here is that Chambers is going to be able to use her judo throws or her blast double, her wrestling, get this fight to the ground, and pull off a submission. So while I'm not playing Kaelin Curran, I do say if you want to put her in a parlay, go ahead.
So the only pick from this fight is Kaelin Curran if you're putting her in a parlay. She is minus 225 on what I'm looking at right now. She would work pretty well in a parlay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good parlay leg. You know, it's a little bit too steep to go to play a straight bet on her just because I don't think she's proven enough. But I think what she has proven is good enough to put her in a parlay and to fade Alex Chambers. So, yeah, I'm going with Kaelin Curran here, probably by stoppage.
So if you're playing counter move, I haven't seen any numbers on counter move. She's probably too pricey for a counter move, but often we see these lower weight classes, especially with the females, because there isn't too many knockouts that happen. They do land a whole bunch of strikes, so possibly Kaelin Curran on your counter move team.
Yeah, for sure. You know, she can definitely finish this fight, so that is a big factor in counter move. So definitely take her into consideration.
Fantastic analysis. Like always, you're no villain, but Dylan Andrews is one, and he's facing Bradley Scott, the Bear. What about this one?
All right, so Dylan Andrews, you know, when he first got on his season of Tough, he was looking like a beast, man. And then he fought Uriah Hall, and that fight literally changed Dylan Andrews' life. He was never the same after the Uriah Hall fight. And the way Uriah Hall finished him was Dylan Andrews was actually in the top position on the ground, and Uriah knocked him out from the bottom, like literally knocked him out off his back. And Dylan Andrews was never the same after that. You know, he made his UFC debut against one of the rejects from that Tough season, and he beat him fairly easily. But then he fought Poppy Abedi, who we all know isn't very good. And Poppy gave him a very, very tough fight. Poppy almost finished Dylan Andrews. And Dylan had to really gut it out, and he knocked Poppy out in the third round after getting worked the entire fight. So after that fight, he basically had his arm wrapped up as if he had hurt his shoulder. So that happened, and then in his next fight, he fought against Clint Hester, and he didn't really look that great that fight either, and then he injures his shoulder again. So that's two fights in a row where this guy has injured his shoulder. And then in his fight after that, he fought Sam Alvey, and he got injured again. He took Alvey down, but now credit to Alvey. Alvey actually hooked Dylan Andrews' leg mid-takedown, and then he reversed the position and knocked him out cold. But after the fight, we found out that Dylan Andrews might have tweaked his neck or his shoulder again. So this guy literally gets injured every single fight. And in addition to that, his chin isn't the best. You know, you can tap him with something that's not that hard, and he will go out. So his confidence isn't what it used to be. He's got to be questioning himself. In my personal opinion, I think he might be one or two fights away from retirement. He's getting up there in age, and the results aren't looking too good for him. So I'm going with Bradley Scott here. Now, what Brad Scott does is he's a tough, gritty guy. He likes to stand and bang. He's got pretty technical Muay Thai. He can take a shot really, really well. He's got a lot of heart, too. And his takedown defense is actually pretty decent. You know, in his last fight with Claudio Silva, he did get grinded out, but Claudio Silva is a very underrated man. He's like a BJJ world champion. He's got some serious jiu-jitsu accolades, and he was able to hold down Bradley Scott for 2 out of 3 rounds. And another example of how good Claudio Silva is, he did that to Leon Edwards, who, you know, the guy that just knocked out Seth Brzezinski in 7 seconds. So, yeah, he did that to Leon Edwards, too. That's how good Claudio Silva is. Now, in my personal opinion, I don't think Dylan Andrews has the top control game of Claudio Silva at all. He's not a multiple-time jiu-jitsu world champion by any means. So I don't think Dylan Andrews is going to be able to hold him down. I do think he might be able to get a takedown or two, but I think Bradley Scott is going to get back up to his feet. He's going to light him up, and I think he's going to either get a knockout or a very dominant decision. So what we're doing is, this is going to be our first play. We're going to put 1.5 units on Bradley Scott.
And right now I'm looking at it, and this is basically a pick 'em fight, and he's currently minus 115.
Yeah, and you know, I know Dylan's going to be looking really, really shredded. He's got a good strength and conditioning program, so there's a potential that after the weigh-ins, the money starts coming in on Andrews, and we can get Brad Scott at plus money. So that'd be real cool. Just keep an eye out for that. But as far as who's going to win, I am picking Bradley Scott, and I am planning on betting on him straight up.
So Flying Squad, be sure to watch the weigh-ins on this fight, and if you can get Bradley Scott at plus money, be sure to pick that. I'm going to go with that.
If you can't get it at plus money, try to get it below minus 120.
I think that this might be Dylan Andrews' last fight in the UFC, and he's going to, like you said, he could retire, or he's going to end up in like Bellator or CFFC.
Absolutely. You know, what we see with Dylan Andrews is what we're seeing with Gray Maynard or Mark Munoz. He's at that stage of his career, and it's no disrespect to him. You know, he had a great career, but unfortunately, this happens to a lot of great fighters, and I mean, just to a lot of fighters in general, and it's happening to him right now. I think Bradley Scott, he actually has been training at the lab, you know, with Benson Henderson, John Crouch, all those great fighters, and I really think he's gonna show big leaps and bounds in this performance.
Now, we had planned on skipping over this next fight. Are we still going to skip it?
Yeah, you know, both these fighters are very unimpressive. I just think that if you're going to pick someone on fantasy, pick Rawlings, because Ellis, she kind of has 1 foot out the door. So I'd go with Beck Rawlings.
Okay, no bet, but if you're doing fantasy like UFC Pick'em where you have to pick one of these two fighters, we're going with Beck Rawlings, Rowdy. And probably decision, right?
Yeah, probably. Maybe a submission, but most likely decision. And do you think she should probably have to fight Ronda Rousey for that nickname?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, lady, you really don't deserve that nickname. I would go ahead and pick Ronda by, minus 5,000.
So do you think it would be less than 10 seconds or less than 5 seconds?
It depends on how long Rawlings ran away from her.
I thought you were going to say it depends how long it takes the ref to stop the fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's a factor too. That's a factor too. But let's move on to that guy that you said hooked that leg real nice against Dillon Andrews and actually dropped him on his head, if I remember correctly. Smiling Sam Alvey versus Dan Kelly. One thing that I want to know is if I ever get the chance to interview Smiling Sam Alvey, is that just a gimmick, or is he actually that damn happy? And if he is that happy, why? I've never seen somebody so happy.
Yeah, the guy's always smiling. He's quite the character. And he was actually on a season of Tough a while back, and he displayed his knockout power then on the fight he won to get into the house. He pretty much did what he always does, which is throw zero strikes for about a minute or two, and then just land a left hook, and his opponent goes down. It's really bizarre with this guy. He literally has the weirdest game plans, but they work, man. He'll take punishment and just let you throw everything you have at him. He'll smile at you, block a couple punches, move out of the way out of a couple kicks, eat a lot of leg kicks, and then he'll just be like, "Okay, I'm gonna throw my left hook." And then he throws it and he knocks people unconscious. So this guy can end a fight at any moment with one punch. Now, as far as betting him goes, I have been high on him on his last three UFC fights, but he was an underdog in all three of those. So, in my personal opinion, Sam Alvey is not a minus 420 kind of fighter. So, I think the line is way too high. Now, the thing with Dan Kelly is that he's a tough guy, man, and he's getting up there in age too, but his body has seemed to hold up relatively well. I know I'm tough. Sheldon Westcott ran right through him, but as far as his UFC career goes, he looks like he's turned a bit of a corner. So it's one of those things where if Sam Alvey just walks around and doesn't throw any strikes at all, and Daniel Kelly is able to pot shot him and run around the ring, maybe get a takedown here and there, Dan Kelly can win the decision. It's all a matter of is he going to get knocked out or not? Because for damn sure, Sam Alvey is not going to, throw a bunch of volume. That's just not his style. He's not a volume striker. He's a one-hitter quitter kind of guy. So my prediction is Sam Alvey via knockout, but I'd be very careful betting on this fight. I just do think the line is a bit too high for someone like Sam Alvey. I don't think he's a minus 420 kind of guy. Last week, Thomas Almeida was minus 420. And in my opinion, that's completely justified. But in Sam Alvey's case, I think the line should be a little lower. But I am picking him to win, most likely by knockout, but Dan Kelly's tough, man, and if he, takes home the upset decision, I'm not going to be too surprised.
One extremely crazy thing about this is you said that he was the underdog in his previous three fights, and now he is the largest favorite on this entire card. And the dude is so unimposing looking that it just blows my mind that he has that kind of KO power.
Dude, it's crazy. Saber Butanche was literally hitting him with everything but the kitchen sink, and Sam is just smiling at him and eating every single shot. And then he's like, "All right, I'm going to throw my left hook now." And he throws it and he launches Mutanch like 5 feet and knocks him out cold. So this guy literally only needs one or two punches to put any man in that division out. It's very, very scary power. But you can take advantage of his lack of volume and his lack of output. He literally takes minutes off of the fight, like he'll just coast and not throw anything. But when he does throw, it's devastating.
So no play on this fight, but for UFC Pick'em, definitely pick Sam Alvey by KO or TKO. I'm saying early, first, second round. For counter move, he's $5,300. That's kind of steep, but keep him in mind. Keep him in mind for your counter move team.
I don't blame people that are putting Sam Alvey in their parlays. Just for me personally, the minus 420 line is too high. So for that reason, I'm passing. But I do understand why people are betting on Sam Alvey.
Fucking crazy left hook knockout power.
Yeah, and I guess we should point out the fact that Dan Kelly is a judo Olympian from Australia, but Sam Alvey, he's shown decent takedown defense, and when he does get taken down, he can get back up. And like what he did to Dylan Andrews when he hooked that leg and reversed the position. So he's savvy, man. Alvey's definitely, he's got some tricks up his sleeve. So Dan Kelly has to be very careful. But there is a path to victory for Dan Kelly. So that's why I'm not betting on the fight, you know, in addition to the line being a little bit too high for my liking.
Amazing analysis once again. This next fight, I've been hearing a lot of talk about people picking the underdog, but the dog is ever so slight at the time that I'm looking at it right now. We've got to pick them, basically, between Kyle Noak from Australia and Jonathan Webb. What do you got?
So, Kyle Noak, man, he actually used to be the bodyguard of Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. Isn't that pretty crazy?
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, this guy's seen it all, man. And, you know, he's a vet, too, as far as his MMA career is concerned. He's had a lot of fights.
28.
Yeah, yeah, and he was real big in the Australian scene coming up. So, this guy's had some experience. Now, he's pretty good everywhere, but his biggest weakness is, for sure, the ground game in terms of his wrestling defense. Patrick Cote successfully out-wrestled this guy. And we all know Patrick Cote is not a wrestler. So for that to happen, it definitely tells you what kind of ground game Kyle Noak has. So on the feet, he does have solid strikes. You know, he does throw good straight punches. He has a good straight right. And he trains at Greg Jackson, so he's really into that oblique kick standing up that John Jones and Carlos Condit like to use. He's developed a little bit of that style. But I think he might be a bit battle-worn. And, you know, he's had too many fights. They're in age, and he's just not looking as good or as promising as he used to, and on some nights, he just doesn't show up. So for that reason, I wouldn't bet on him. Now, as far as his opponent, Jonathan Webb, is concerned, this guy's actually a Henzo Gracie guy. So he's known for having a very explosive wrestling and jiu-jitsu game. So not only can he take you down with like a blast double or a single, but after he gets you on the ground, he doesn't just stall the fight out. He actually tries to finish you. He tries to go for submissions and get dominant positions, ground and pound, all the important stuff you need to do to finish a fight or win on the scorecards dominantly. So I'm going to go with Jonathan Webb here. I don't know if I'd call it an upset anymore because it is very close to pick 'em. But what I'd like to do is, like I said with that other fight, I'd like to wait for the weigh-ins to happen because I want to see if the public comes in on Noak a little bit. They have been coming in on him lately, so I want to see if there's a chance to get Webb at plus money. And if there is, I'm going to only put one unit on him.
Kyle Noak, from the picture I'm looking at right here, is jacked as fuck. So yeah, if he looks super jacked at the weigh-ins, the money might come in on him, and I will too. Like you said, pick Jonathan Webb if he's at plus money. What if he's at minus 120? Do you still put a one unit on Jonathan Webb?
I'd probably pass at that point. You know, just because we haven't seen him in the UFC. But the reason I do want to bet on him is because his style, the way the styles match up is, Webb's got great grappling, and that's always been Noak's weakness. Now, I know Noak's been training with Cowboy and Paul Felder and all those, you know, all those badasses down at the ranch. So they have good wrestlers over there. So he's definitely been working on his wrestling, but I just don't know how much he can improve in such a short amount of time. And against a guy like Webb's grappling chops are top-notch, man. So I do think Webb's going to be able to take him down, control him, possibly get a submission or a ground-and-pound TKO. It might get interesting if Noak is able to get back up to his feet or stuff some takedowns and make it a striking match. Then it's going to, you know, it's going to get very interesting, but I really believe that Webb's going to be able to have positional control on the ground and dominate the fight there.
So as for UFC Pick'em, basically we're going to pick Jonathan Webb either sub or maybe TKO. I'm leaning towards decision, but what I usually do is I pick round three because you still get 50 points for going to a decision. And then on counter move, Kyle Noak is $5,500. So Jonathan Webb is $4,100. I would definitely put Jonathan Webb on your counter move team at that kind of money. You could definitely afford some other way higher price guys if you get Jonathan Webb on your team.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, and I can see him winning by decision. Like you said, Kyle Noak is a very tough guy. He's very resilient. He just doesn't have the defense on the ground. So we'll see if he's made improvements on Saturday night. But yeah, got to go with Webb here.
Let's move on to a featherweight matchup between Hatsu Hioki versus Daniel the Hangman Hooker. Tell us about this one, buddy.
So Hatsu Hioki, back when he was fighting in Japan, this guy was thought to be the number two featherweight in the world, right behind Jose Aldo. He was on a big, big streak, and he was absolutely dominating guys. You know, he fought Marlon Sandro, and if you're a hardcore fan, you know Marlon Sandro is a legend of the sport. He's one of the old school OG guys from Novo and Yao. You know, Jose Aldo, Henan Barao, they all look up to Marlon Sandro. He's a role model for all of them. And back in his heyday, he would knock guys out viciously, like within like 19 seconds, and dudes would be out cold for at least 5 minutes. So that dude, Marlon Sandro, was the champion, and then Hioki fought him, and Hioki beat him up in a way where Sandro was never the same ever again. And this was over in Japan, where if you get on the ground, you can knee dudes in the face on the ground. So Hioki would be in a north-south position on Sandro, and he'd be landing knees to Sandro's head. And credit to Sandro, he never tapped out or quit. He just ate the shots and took his ass whooping like a man. But it was a sign that Hatsu Hioki's got some serious talent. And then he came to the UFC, and it just didn't translate. He wasn't able to be as dominant on the ground as he was in Japan, and that might be due to the rule change where he can't throw those knees to the head of a grounded opponent, you know, and also the addition of elbows. I believe they're not allowed to throw elbows there, but they are allowed to throw knees to the head of a ground opponent. It's kind of interesting. But I think the rule change and also the traveling really messed with him. This guy was used to fighting in Japan all the time. So he comes over to the UFC, and he doesn't look nearly as impressive. And granted, he has fought some really, really tough guys. So what he does bring to the table is a very, very solid jab. His jab is great, man. So if he can keep Hooker on the outside, that'll work. But the thing is, Hooker is a really, really tall guy. Now, the other thing that Hioki does well, and this is the biggest part of his game, is his submission game and his wrestling. If he takes you down, he can get on top of you and be very, very heavy, and he can go for a mounted triangle. He does some very unorthodox stuff. So he's very savvy on the ground. He took down Charles Oliveira. He got submitted eventually. I mean, who doesn't if they take down Charles Oliveira? But what I'm trying to say here is that he can get you down on the ground. Now, Daniel Hooker, he doesn't have the best wrestling defense in the world, but what he does have is serious, serious heart. In his fight with Maximo Blanco, they literally went back and forth. They went life and death. And I don't want to compare it to Forrest Griffin versus Stefan Bonner, but they were literally just throwing shots at each other, no problem, just standing in front of each other and trading. And Maximo Blanco did get him down a couple times, but Hooker is very, very good at scrambling back to his feet and getting the fight where he wants it. And his striking game is really decent. He's got very, very good output. He uses his long, rangy strikes, straight punches, push kicks. The only issue with him in his striking game is his striking defense. He eats a lot of punches. So he's going to have to tighten that up because Hioki's not really a slugger, but he's more of a technical precision guy. Like I was saying, he's got that really good jab. So Hooker's going to have to be on top of that. On the feet, I'd give the edge to Hooker. On the ground, for sure, Hioki has the edge. But if Hooker's able to get back up to his feet or stuff some takedowns and tire out Hioki, he can for sure get this upset. Now, I understand why Hioki is favored, but minus 300 is a little steep. He's favored because he's fought the better guys, he's more proven and stuff like that. But at this point in his career, I'm not sure if he's the fresher guy. Now, I'm not going to be betting on this fight, but I personally wouldn't be parlaying Hioki, and I don't blame anyone for taking a stab on the dog. I mean, plus 250, man. It's a pretty attractive price.
Yeah, that'd be a hell of a nice payout. And also on counter move, Hioki is 5,300. And so I'm going to stay away from him there. But if you were playing UFC Pick'em, which one are you picking here?
Man, you know, I actually changed my pick. I initially had Hatsuhiyoki by decision, but now I changed it to Daniel Hooker by decision. So who knows? Maybe I'll change it again a couple of times. But I'm leaning more towards Hooker, man. Just after watching the film, I think he's got something to prove. He's aggressive, he's young, he's hungry, and I like his style a lot. He tries to win the fight. And Hiyoki, he gets off to a good start in his fights, but he'll get discouraged and stuff like that. And you don't want to see that against a young, hungry guy like Hooker. So I am leaning more towards Hooker, but I'm not convinced. So that's why I'm not betting on it. But as far as fantasy is concerned, I'm going to go with the underdog here.
We're going to move on to the main card portion of this fight card. Jake, the Celtic Kid Matthews versus James, the Texecutioner Vic. James Vic is fucking super tall, but what else do you have on this fight?
So, James Vick is super tall, like you just said. He's 6'3" and he makes 155 pounds. So, I mean, that right there, that says a lot just for the sole fact that most of the guys in the 155 pound division are much shorter. And not only is he tall, he knows how to use his range and his reach. That's the most important part. You know, a lot of guys are really tall, but they don't know how to use that reach, but he does. He knows how to create that distance and land the strikes he needs to land. And off the ground, you know, he can get back up to his feet really quickly if he gets taken down. Now, in his last fight with Nick Hine, Hine actually dropped him twice in the first round, but James Vick showed his heart. He showed his toughness. He got up. He kept fighting. And, you know, he went on to win the decision. Interestingly enough, one judge scored it 30-27 for Vick, despite the fact that he got dropped twice in the first round. So this guy is very good with the judges. Another example of that that I'll bring up is in his fight against Valmir Lazaro. Now, Lazaro is a Novo Uniao guy, and if you know Novo Uniao, you know Jose Aldo, Henan Barao, all those guys. That's one of the best camps in the world. And Valmir Lazaro is one of their better guys, and he comes in there, and James Vick goes toe-to-toe with him. You don't just go toe-to-toe with a guy from Novo Uniao. And James Vick, they went life and death, man. They were standing and banging. And, you know, that fight could have gone either way, in my opinion. But once again, I believe two judges scored at 30-27 for Vick. So he has some kind of control over the judges. His style is people think he's winning the fights. So you really got to take that into consideration in a fight like this. He's going to be the bigger guy. Now, with Matthews, he's a short, stocky little pit bull. This kid has looked really, really good in the UFC. When he gets on top of you, it's very, very hard to get out. And he lands big ground and pound. It almost reminds me of Rory McDonald back when he first burst onto the UFC scene, and he was fighting guys like Che Mills. So Jake Matthews kind of reminds me of that, but he's kind of green and he's a little bit unpolished. So I'm gonna go with the upset here and pick James Vick. I think that Vick is He might get taken down once or twice, but I believe he'll be able to keep the fight on his feet, keep his distance and range, and outpoint Jake Matthews to a decision. And, you know, even if Matthews wins a round or two on our scorecards, watch out for a 30-27 for Vic.
Let's see about the counter move. Counter move, this is straight up. They're both 4,800. Do you see Vic getting the finish? I don't think so. So you said probably decision. Don't put him on your counter move team then, right?
Yeah, Vic does have good submissions. His length really helps him get chokes, you know, against Ramzy Nijhum. Ramzy was trying to take him down, which is what Jake Matthews is going to probably try to do. And James Vic's arms are so damn long that he's able to snatch submissions from anywhere. And he does really unorthodox chokes. His guillotines are really, really, they're not textbook. They're something that only a man with his wingspan can achieve. So, yeah, he can catch you with some really unorthodox stuff. And obviously, you know, he can use knees and push kicks. He knocked out Darren Cruikshank with a knee on Tough. So, I mean, another thing I want to point out about this fight is that James Vick has fought the better level of competition. And this is including his time on Tough. He went in there, he beat Joe Proctor, he beat Dakota Cochran, he knocked out Darren Cruikshank, and he lost to Michael Chiesa, but all those guys are better than all the people that Jake Matthews's face. Jake Matthews, he beat Deshaun Johnson, who, yeah, he was 10-0 coming into the UFC, but all the guys that he had beat up until then, they didn't even have 500 records. Like, he was beating guys that are like 1-10 and stuff. So, yeah, Jake Matthews ran through that guy, but when you look back on it, it's not as impressive as if you ran through someone like James Vick. So, if Matthews is able to come in here and beat James Vick, maybe I'll start to believe the hype a little bit, but at this point, I do believe that Matthews is running off of some hype, whereas James Vick has really proven himself against some real tough guys. For that reason, at plus money, I got to go with James Vick.
This is a matchup between undefeateds, and somebody's O has got to go. And we here on the Flying MMA Opinions and News podcast with Flying Brian and Daniel Levy are picking the Texecutioner to keep his zero. Let's move on to the real, really exciting portion of this fight card. We've got one of the oldest guys on the entire UFC roster, a guy that has had all of his 15 mixed martial arts professional wins by stoppage, and he's also nicknamed the Hippo, Anthony Perosh versus Sean the Real OC O'Connell.
I mean, what can you say about Anthony Perosh? The guy is a grizzled veteran. He's been through it all. He's the kind of guy that if you're a student of the game, you'd want to have Anthony Perosh teach you a couple tricks. I mean, the guy's, he's been through it all, man. He's fought everybody, and he's 42, still winning fights in the UFC. So I got nothing but respect for Anthony Perosh. And the reason his name is the Hippo is because his jiu-jitsu game is so solid that when he gets on top of you, it's like a damn brick house is sitting on you, man. You can't move him. He's a hippo. So his jiu-jitsu game is super solid. And if he's able to get Sean O'Connell down to the ground and get some positional dominance, you know, he could foreseeably get a submission victory here like he's been doing in his past couple wins. However, I personally really don't think that's going to happen. What I think is going to happen is that Sean O'Connell is going to be able to keep the fight standing, and he's going to press forward. And this guy is tough. He's gritty. In his fight against Matt Van Buren, man, he was taking some serious, serious shots. He was taking big body kicks, big punches to the face. And Van Buren, if I'm not mistaken, he's like 6'6". So Sean O'Connell was fighting against a giant, eating big shots, but he stuck it out, and then he landed the big shot and got the knockout. So this is the kind of guy that you have to knock him out to beat him. Like, he'll keep coming forward. He throws looping punches, but there's something about the way he throws that it's not necessarily sloppy. It just doesn't look pretty. But he's extremely accurate with his looping punches. So he can for sure get this knockout over Perosh if he lands one of those big punches. And I really believe he will, because he just tries to win fights, man. He doesn't take his foot off the pedal at all. He goes forward the entire time and throws big punches at you. And in his fight against John Volante, in my opinion, he won 30-27. For some reason, the judges scored it for Volante. I was very, very surprised by that decision. But with that being said, he looked very good to me in that fight. And, you know, I thought he won it 30-27. Then he comes back in his next fight, gets a knockout victory. And in his UFC debut against Gmo, even though he got knocked out, up until that point, he was looking very, very good. And as we all know, Gmo knocked out Perosh as well, but it was actually in 8 seconds, one of the fastest knockouts in UFC history. So what I think is going to happen here is that they're going to come forward, they're going to throw some strikes at each other. Anthony Perosh is going to try to get the fight to the ground. And he might do it early, but I think O'Connell will get back up or stuff the takedown. He'll keep throwing those big overhand rights and left hooks, and eventually he'll catch Perosh and put him down. So I'm going one unit on the Real OC, Sean O'Connell.
As per usual, I will follow you on this because, like I said before, you are my leader, but my heart is with Anthony Perosh. I feel, I don't know, bad, or I feel something for the older fighters in mixed martial arts because it's really a young man's game. And so I want the old guy to win. And then, I mean, can you go against somebody that has the nickname the Hippo? That's, to me, that's hilarious. He's old. I want him to win, but I will follow you one unit, Sean, the Real OC, O'Connell.
Another thing I want to point out about this fight is that the oddsmakers actually opened Sean O'Connell as the favorite, but the public loves Anthony Perosh, like you just said, and they literally bet the fight to where the line switched around, and now Perosh is the favorite and O'Connell is the underdog, which is pretty interesting in my opinion. But yeah, it's hard not to root for Perosh for the reasons you mentioned, but you know, in the betting game, you can't be emotional about it, and I really believe O'Connell's going to get the victory.
Yeah, I usually try to stay away from the ones that I have emotions on. Like, I'll never bet on the Spider or Big Country Nelson, Cowboy Cerrone, because those are some of my favorite guys. And so, like, I want to cheer for them, so I just stay away from the units. And now, I don't have much emotional attachment to Anthony Perosh other than I want to cheer for the old guys. Like Dan Henderson, I want to cheer for him just because he's a legend and he's old, but I will be picking against him for sure against Tim Bosch.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to get into that card once that comes around.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I hope that Dan's very slight underdog so that I can make some money.
I hope Tim's a huge underdog. It's just not going to happen, but that'd be very nice.
Now, these guys probably have the most potential at maybe a sometime title shot on this entire card, besides the main event, of course. Number 14, middleweight in the division, Brad Tavares versus heavy-handed from New Zealand, Robert Whittaker.
Man, I'm pumped for this one. This might be fight of the night, dude. Like, Brad Tavares, he's really found his home in the UFC, and he's really developing his game. What he does well is he doesn't do anything flashy. He's just very, very good at the fundamentals of the entire MMA game. So when he's on the feet, he doesn't really throw that much, but what he does throw is usually effective. He has a very sharp jab, a good straight right, and what he likes to throw the most on the feet is actually his roundhouse kick to the leg. He has a very good leg kick. So when you take that into consideration against a guy like Whittaker is a high-level striker, man. He's like a karate guy, but an evolved version of it. His background is in karate, but he's added boxing and Muay Thai elements to his striking game that he's like a hybrid kind of striker. So he has that leaping in and out style that the karate guys do, but then he's got extremely sharp head movement like a boxer. His head movement is so damn good that I'm just so impressed with this guy. Now, the reason I'm very high on his head movement is that in MMA, since you're using the smaller gloves, parrying like you would in kickboxing or boxing isn't as effective as head movement. So I'm really big on guys that move their head effectively, and Robert Whittaker has some of the best head movement that I've seen in that division. And ever since he moved up to 185 and he fought Clint Hester, he just looks like a new animal. You know, at 170 he looked great too, but like he said that, the weight cuts were draining him and he wasn't fighting to his full potential. If his full potential is anywhere near how he fought Clint Hester, this guy has some serious potential at 185. He looked explosive. He looked much faster. He looked crisper. He looked so dynamic. I mean, I can't say enough good things about this guy. So here's another factor we got to talk about in this fight. Brad Tavares is going to be a much larger guy than Robert Whittaker. Like, you're going to see them at the weigh-ins, and I'm pretty damn sure that Tavares is just going to maybe dwarf him a little bit. But the thing is, Tavares isn't the fastest guy. He kind of, you know, he has a big, heavy leg kick, but he's just not a very fast guy. And Whittaker, he's like a little bee, man. And when he hits, man, it hurts. So I really think that Whittaker's going to be able to use his movement, his speed, his head movement, his angles, and just his all-around striking game to light up Brad Tavares. And I can see Robert Whittaker getting the decision or possibly even getting the knockout. So I'm going to put one unit on Robert Whittaker. Now, if Brad Tavares is able to win this fight, what he'll do is try to slow down the pace of the fight and get Whittaker tired, maybe get a takedown, grind out the rounds. But the way they match up on the feet is the reason that I'm picking Whittaker, because Tavares does like to throw those big leg kicks, But Whitaker's one of these guys that'll check your leg kick. So if he starts checking kicks, Tavares might be a little bit discouraged to keep throwing that leg kick. And, you know, for anyone that's fought or trained, we all know that getting your leg kick checked, that shin on shin, is one of the most painful things in the world, dude. So if Whitaker starts checking some of these leg kicks, I'm pretty sure Tavares is going to be hesitant to throw them, and he's going to have to rely more on his hands. And Whitaker has that speed advantage. So I think Whitaker's going to be showing off his movement, his technical precision, his defense, and I think he's going to make a big statement here. So for that reason, I'm picking Robert Whitaker.
And on counter move, Whitaker's pretty damn cheap, $4,800. I might have to put him on my team.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a worthwhile play. You know, Tavares, man, his last performance against Nate Marquardt was the best performance of his career. It's funny because the crowd was booing like crazy, but for me, I really appreciate all aspects of the game. But what he was showing with his striking game was some patience and his feints, the way he sets things up. It's all great. I just think he's going to be a little bit too slow for Whitaker. I think they're going to be operating at different frequencies. So for that, that's the reason I'm picking Whitaker. But, I mean, Tavares is a tough guy. I got a lot of respect for him. He's a great fighter, and he wins a lot of fights. One criticism or thing that I've noticed in Tavares' game is that he actually loses the third round of his fights a lot. Like, he'll win the first two, and then he'll always lose the third. Like, even against Bubba McDaniel, who's no longer in the UFC, he lost the third round. Against Lorenz Larkin, who's recently dropped to 170 pounds, Tavares lost the third round. Now, in this specific fight, I think Whitaker might be the more tired guy in the third round, so maybe Tavares can take that round. But I think the first two rounds, Whitaker is going to be lighting him up and could potentially put him away.
Whitaker is slightly younger than Brad Tavares, so he could be the fresher fighter, have the bigger upside. I really like that pick. Whitaker is plus 130, 140-ish at this time. So we're putting one unit on Robert Whitaker, you say?
Yeah, and one thing I want to point out, too, is that Robert Whitaker is expecting a child at any moment now. Now, I know in Fightnomics, I forget if it said guys win more or lose more when they're about to have a child. I know it's in the books. I need to check that out. But in my personal opinion, I think he's going to be super focused and hungry for the victory. So I don't think it's going to be too much of a distraction. I mean, I know obviously it's a distraction. You're having a kid, but this guy's a professional, man. He's going to come ready to fight, and I think he's going to get the win.
Yeah, you would think like maybe more motivated to get that extra $50,000, you know, to help bring your child into this world on a really high note.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the kind of fighter he is. He always fights for that bonus. He's super exciting, so I agree with that 100%.
Speaking of super exciting, sometimes people talk about the people's main event versus the actual main event. Well, this main event is both. We've got Stipe, who I like to call the Cleveland Croatian, Miocic, versus Mark the Super Samoan Hunt.
This fight's going to be awesome, man. You know, Stipe Miocic has made big improvements in his game. I think a lot of people, myself included, thought that Junior Cigano was just going to knock him out in the first or second round. And Stipe Miocic comes out, and he actually wins the first and second round, arguably. The only problem was he eventually gassed out, and Junior Cigano ended up taking over the fight and outpointing him. But Stipe showed a hell of a chin, dude. He got dropped one time in the third round. For whatever reason, Junior decided not to follow up with punches, and he kind of let Stipe off the hook, which I don't think would have happened back prior to the last two fights with Cain Velasquez that Junior had. I think those two fights took a lot out of Junior. But much respect to Stipe. So he gets knocked down by Junior, and he gets back up and keeps fighting. And he was very gassed out from rounds 3 through 5, so it cost him the decision. Now here's another chance to get back at a 5-round main event against Mark Hunt. Now the thing with Mark Hunt is the dude doesn't look like, you know, one of the scariest heavyweights in the world, but man, he's one of the scariest heavyweights in the world. His striking is so high level, the way he sets up his strikes. he has a very nice 1-3, a jab to the left hook, which he uses to get his opponents covering up high, and then he'll find the slightest little opening and crack that uppercut or overhand right or straight right, even his left hook, and he puts people down, man. In his last fight against Fabricio Werdum, he actually took the fight on about 2 weeks short notice, and he was like weighing over 300 pounds in the two-week training camp he had. So one could say that wasn't the best Mark Hunt we've ever seen. But with that being said, he goes in there and drops Fabricio Werdum twice in the first round. It was either twice in the first round or one time each round. But regardless.
I'm pretty sure it was twice in the first round.
Yeah. So he drops him two times in the first round and looks absolutely spectacular. And in the second round, he looks really good too. But Werdum, who, you know, he trains under Master Rafael Cordero, who's one of the best coaches in the world. So Werdum throws a flying knee and catches Mark Hunt and knocks him out. So the way Mark Hunt gets knocked out in the UFC lately is via spectacular shit. Like, Junior Dos Santos knocked him out with a spinning heel kick, and Fabricio Werdum knocked him out with a flying knee. So I'm not sure that Stipe is going to be able to knock him out with his straight punches, which is Stipe's main weapon. Stipe, to me, is kind of like the Michael Bisping of heavyweight, where, like, he's got really good footwork, really good volume with his striking, and, you know, he'll TKO guys and stuff like that, but I don't think he has that one-punch knockout power that someone like Junior Dos Santos or Mark Hunt possesses. So if Stipe is able to get the TKO, it'll be more of like an accumulation of volume and Hunt getting tired and stuff like that. But the way they match up, I actually think Hunt can knock him out. I think Hunt's going to be faster than him as far as exchanging strikes, and I think he's going to hit a lot harder. And I think if he drops Stipe, he's not going to let him off the hook like Junior Dos Santos did. So at these odds, currently Mark Hunt's plus 200, and it seems as though all the money's coming in on Stipe. Like, it's still coming in on him. I'd like to put a unit on Mark Hunt, but what I want to do is wait a little bit longer because I think the line's going to get even better. I think the public perception is that Mark Hunt's on his way out and that Stipe is on his way up. And they might be right because Mark Hunt is 40 years old or 41 or something like that, and Stipe just went 5 hard rounds with Junior Cigano. But to me, it's all about how the styles match up. And if this is a primarily stand-up fight, Mark Hunt has the edge, man. His striking is too powerful for Stipe. So Stipe is going to have to try to mix in some takedowns and really make it an MMA fight, you know, versus a striking fight. But Mark Hunt has shown big improvement in his takedown defense. He's been stuffing a lot of takedowns, man, and he's been getting back up from the bottom when he does get taken down. So it's not going to be a cakewalk for Stipe Miocic. Based on the lines, I mean, I'm not about to lay minus 240 on Stipe Miocic, and I'm looking at plus 200 on Mark Hunt. To me, that's the way to go. One unit on Mark Hunt, but I'm not doing it yet. I'm waiting for the line to get even better because I know everyone's all over Stipe. So for this fight, I'm going against the grain, and I'm going with the underdog once again.
I really like that observation where you said that Stipe is similar to Michael Bisping. They actually look similar, and you're right, their styles are similar. For a while, I was thinking that I was going to pick Stipe because, to me at least, Mark Hunt is similar to Roy Nelson. And we maybe you don't know, but Stipe gassed out Roy Nelson and just put a smackdown on him for, I think it was a 3-round fight. But compared to Roy Nelson, Mark Hunt is way more diverse. And I know that Roy Nelson is lauded for his chin. Mark Hunt's chin might be a little better.
Yeah, and I've heard some people make that same comparison about Mark Hunt and Roy Nelson, but in my personal opinion, I think Mark Hunt is completely better on the feet. His striking arsenal is much more diverse. I mean, Roy Nelson, all he really does is try to set up that overhand right, and if he can't do that, then he most likely gets outpointed. But what Mark Hunt does is, I mean, the dude will fucking throw spinning back fists and stuff like that. He throws leg kicks. The way he sets up his strikes with that, either he does a double jab or he does a 1-3, the jab left hook, and then he sets up a straight right or an uppercut. his striking arsenal, like I said, is just way more diverse than Roy Nelson. So I don't think that Stipe is going to be able to pick him apart per se. But if Stipe is going to have, you know, some success on the feet, that's how it's going to be. He's going to be using those straight punches and, you know, those fast combos, that volume striking style to outpoint Hunt, man. But I'm just worried for Stipe that on one of those combos that he throws, he's going to get countered with a big left hook, or Mark Hunt's going to back him up into the fence and, you know, land one of those uppercuts and put him out. So I can definitely see Mark Hunt dropping him. Now, do you think Stipe is going to potentially throw a flying knee or a head kick or something like that at Mark Hunt and knock him out? You know, obviously, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. Stipe is a great fighter. But just on the price, man, the price just seems way too high on Stipe. So that's why I am fading the public.
Yeah, the line, I don't see it being that. You know, to me, it's a pick 'em, I thought. Like, I've been really wavering on this for the last 2 weeks on who I was going to pick. Mark Hunt, Stipe. So that would mean that it's a pick 'em. But I have been leaning towards Mark Hunt lately, and you've swayed me completely to that side. And as for counter move goes, these guys are pretty much even. Mark Hunt is 5,300. Stipe Miocic is 5,200. And, well, heavyweights, often the fight is ended. And then also there's a possibility of it being finished because it's heavyweight. And then it's a 5-round fight, so that gives you more time to get strikes landed, an extra 10 minutes compared to the rest of the card. And so I would put one of these two guys on your counter move team. Now, Stipe is probably going to land the volume, but I'm putting Mark Hunt on my counter move team because I think that he's going to put Stipe out.
Yeah, man. Mark Hunt, he's such a dangerous striker. He can end a fight at any instance, and I really think that's what's going to happen this weekend. But if Stipe goes out there and all of a sudden makes Mark Hunt look old, that won't surprise me, but I just don't think it's going to happen based on how Mark Hunt's been looking lately. I thought he looked great in his title shot, which he took on 2 weeks short notice. So assuming he got a full camp this time, he's going to look even better than that. So that's why I'm going with him.
Now, that pretty much wraps up this card. In 1 second, I'm going to ask you to give us a rundown of all of the picks that you've made on this podcast here today. But before I do that, I'm going to say my counter move team. This is what I think I'm going to go with for my counter move team. Tell me if I'm wrong or if I should change any of this. I've got Mark Hunt, Jonavin Webb, Robert Whittaker, Kalen Curran, and Alptekin Özkılıç.
Yeah, man, looks good to me. You know, you could always consider Sean O'Connell, but as far as that team's concerned, it looks pretty good too. You know, Brad Scott maybe, but all those picks were good.
That's right, Brad Scott, yes. I don't know, for some reason on counter move, I always feel like I need to use my entire salary. You know, I just try to get to use that. I don't want to leave extra money out there.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And you should, you know, stick with finishers too. So, yeah, I like your team.
Well, I put Kalen Curran on there because the lower classes, like I said before, often land a shit ton of punches, especially in the female divisions because not many people get put out. And then you said that there's a possibility of her getting a sub finish, so that's why I put Kalen Curran on there. I put Özkılıç on there as well because of the lower weight class, but I'm going to switch him for Brad Scott because of my lack of faith in Dylan Andrews and Brad Scott getting the finish. So now, updated team, Mark Hunt, Jonavin Webb, Robert Whittaker, Kalen Curran, and Brad Scott. So what is the summary of all of the picks that we've made here today?
Okay, so we're betting on Brad Scott, and then we're waiting on the line on Jonavin Webb. We're hoping that the public keeps coming in on Kyle Noak and we can get some plus money on Jonavin Webb. But as long as we get him under minus 120, I'd like to put a unit on him, but I'm really aiming for that plus money. So keep an eye on Jonavin Webb. And then I'm putting a unit on James Vick, on Sean O'Connell, and on Robert Whittaker. And as far as the main event's concerned, I'm just waiting for the line to get even better because the public is all over Stipe Miocic. So going to go with Mark Hunt here.
But the flying squad, everyone that's listening right now should keep an eye on the line because if it starts to shift towards Mark, you might want to get on it before it shifts too much, or if it keeps shifting more towards Stipe, wait, and then get the best money possible.
Yeah, and definitely watch the weigh-ins on Friday. You know, it's always a good indication of how your guys are looking mentally, physically. I always like to check it out.
Daniel, I think this is probably the best analysis that you've ever done. You have outdone yourself once again. I can't wait till the next episode where we break down UFC Fight Night 66. Is that what it is?
Yeah, man. We got Frankie Edgar and Uriah Faber, and I'm just going to let the audience know it's going to be one of our biggest plays of the year for that fight. So make sure you tune in.
Make sure to tune in next week. Will you be dropping that information right on the podcast?
I can. Absolutely.
So look for that podcast next week. Before we get out of here, Daniel, is there any shout-outs that you want to do right now?
Well, thank you, Brian, for having me back on the show. Just want to thank all my friends, my family, and all the listeners of the show. Thanks so much for your support. And, you know, feel free to contact me on Twitter at BestFightPicks, at MMA Thought, or at DFL on Drums. And I'm always up for chatting MMA with anyone, so hit me up.
Me as well. I am at FlyingMMA on the old Twitter there, and my one and only shout out goes to Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA, raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. You can find him on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 or on Instagram. If you haven't got your daily dose of Q in yet, I seriously don't know what you're doing with your life, but he is at Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. Thank you so much for listening this week, and thank you, Daniel.
Thanks, Brian. You have a good one.
You too. Namaste.